The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gas House Gang in for the Dave Glover Show. One more hour to go. These last 3 hours have just flown by. Along with Bernie Miklas, my name is Matt Pauly. Thanks so much for being tuned in. We're going to talk some football, some NFL football right now, following a great day of NFL football yesterday if you're a Chiefs fan, because they looked really good playing their Christmas Day game. Let's welcome in an NFL.com columnist. He is Jeffrey Cheetah. Jeffrey, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Jeffrey, Bernie here, man. Hey, what I come into work today and I see your names on the guest list, and I'm like, all right. Ever since the radio station I work for went out of business, you and I haven't had a chance to talk. And I'm like, can you believe what a great guy Jeffrey is? Because it's like his old friend is back on radio, and he's like, yeah, sure. You know, and I'll go on with those guys. So thanks for doing this as always. And, you know, happy holidays to you and your family. How's everything going in KC?
It's going well, and happy holidays to you guys as well. You know, it's always a crazy time of year with the playoffs starting to ramp up and all these crazy games. But, you know, nothing beats family time. You can always enjoy that.
Hey, that Chiefs win yesterday was an eye-opener on many levels. And it isn't obviously just because they won, because all they've been doing is winning. But that was, you know, that was just kind of like, okay, it's go time. It's late in the season. It's time to just get everything going or whatever. It seemed like that to just a fan watching the game, because every part of their team was on point. They had not played that way that well all season in a game. So are we making too much of that? Or was that the Chiefs saying, okay, it's that time of year, we have to get our act together?
I don't think too much is being made of it. They had not had that kind of a complete game in a long time. You're right. I can't remember the last time they had a game like that. And so that was, I think it was important for them to see it from a confidence standpoint, because the last thing you wanted was to get the bye and still have doubts about what you could accomplish. For me, the big takeaways in that game was with two things. One, you see what their offense can do when they're able to protect Patrick Mahomes, and you see what their defense can do, how dominant they can be when they're able to get turnovers. And those two things had not been happening over the course of the year. And in fact, I think before the last 2 or 3 weeks, they were in the negative as far as turnover differential goes. So I think they're plus 10 in the last three games, giving up one sack. And I know a lot's been made about Hollywood Brown coming back into the equation and some other guys getting healthy. But to me, that's the two biggest things, is that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is upright and they're taking the ball away.
We rarely see teams on like Thursday night football play a really clean game. This was like that exponentially with three games in 11 days. Is it even more impressive that that kind of effort comes at a period where they've played that many games in such a short amount of time?
Well, yeah, and I think you saw the difference in terms of how one team could deal with that and then the other team couldn't. You know, as good as the Chiefs were and as sharp as they were in that game, the Steelers were the complete opposite for long stretches of that game. And so I think you saw what Andy Reid can do and what Patrick Mahomes can do. It's to their advantage when you don't have a full week to prepare for them. And, I said going into this, not just this three-game stretch, but this five-game stretch where they were going to play the Chargers, the Browns, the Texans, the Steelers, and the Broncos, four teams that are going to be in the playoffs, and one team that's really physical. You would learn a lot about this team. And so they have not lost a game since then. They played their best football during this stretch. And to your earlier question about it being go time, I think that what they've realized is that, you know, they can't be what they were, you know, 2-3 years ago. They wanted to be more explosive, more prolific on offense this year. Injuries and some offensive line issues got in the way of that, but they can be really sharp in the quick game. They can be really sharp in the run game. They didn't run it great yesterday, but I think that they understand that they're going to have to drive the football down the field, control the time of possession, and that's going to be their route to winning a championship.
You wrote a great piece the other day Well, you always do, my man. Jeffrey Chedia, senior columnist, NFL Network, NFL.com. But I thought it was great. In fact, I thought that I was going to be asked some questions the other day when I did a hit on the station, but we ran out of time to do it. I had your piece as like a study guide, a quick study guide. You did a buy and sell on contenders in each league, which leads us to the Baltimore Ravens, because as impressive as the Chiefs were yesterday, that show that the Ravens put on, that smackdown the Ravens put on Houston, was something to behold. Yeah. Lamar Jackson, not that he was ever out of the MVP race, but he's very much front and center along with a couple other people. But it looks like the Ravens have also found it, whatever it is. I know their defense is playing a lot better. Derrick Henry's amazing, and Lamar Jackson is obviously amazing. How dangerous are they? Have you sort of moved them up mentally in terms of AFC teams you think can win it all?
Yes, you know, without question. I think there's seven teams that can win it in the entire league, in NFC, Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit, and Philadelphia. And I think there's three in the AFC, the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bills. And the Ravens certainly have moved into, I think, the top five categories because, as you mentioned, their defense has come around. And that was a big shock at the start of the year because they're usually pretty strong on that side of it. And I think they had a lot of communication issues. They moved Kyle Hamilton into a full-time role at safety instead of sliding him around to different spots, and that's helped with the communication. And they've got talent over there. That was never the question. The issue was Mike McDonald, their former coordinator, who had the number one defense last year, is now coaching in Seattle. And so they had to figure things out. I still don't know if I fully trust Justin Tucker, which sounds strange to say because he's had some big kicks throughout his career, but he's missed some big kicks this year. But, yeah, you look at the way Lamar Jackson is playing, and I say it all the time. Derrick Henry has had the quietest 1,700-yard season in the history of football. I can't think of another guy in the NFL who's run for that many yards and nobody's talking about him. So it's that's a dangerous threat when you got those two guys and the other weapons. So I think them and Buffalo, despite having to come to Arrowhead to play games, they can win there with what they have.
Speaking of things happening somewhat quietly, Lamar Jackson moves by Michael Vick for the all-time rushing yardage for a quarterback. And he does it in 102 games over seven seasons. Vick's mark, he got to where he finished with 143 games over 13 years. When Michael Vick was playing, all we did was talk about him and his ability to run the ball and everything, and rightfully so, but it feels like we don't do that with Jackson, and here he is, not just getting past the record, but doing it exponentially faster. Can you kind of evaluate, put your spin on why we don't talk the way about Lamar Jackson that we did about Michael Vick?
Well, I think when you go back to Michael Vick, when he was playing, he was one of one. I mean, he was a unicorn. There was nobody as athletically gifted as him playing the position. You know, you had mobile quarterbacks like McNabb, and, you know, I think Steve Young might have still been at the end of it, towards the end of his career at that point, or maybe he was already done. But there were a few guys who ran around and did some stuff. Jeff Garcia comes to mind, but there weren't a ton of guys who were prolific at it. Yeah, but now it's like when Mahomes came around and when Lamar showed up, I told people, these guys are phenomenal, but in like 5 years, there's going to be like seven or eight of these guys. And now you look around and you've got Jaden Daniels and you've got Josh Allen. And, you know, Joe Burrow is not a full-time runner, but he can move around when he has to. And he's had some big runs in this league to help his team win games. And, you know, obviously Jalen Hurts. And so there's just more guys like him. And I think, to be honest with you, I think the way the way the NFL has changed, the way defense is played, and the rules being opened up so much for the offense, that we take numbers for granted now. You know, I think I saw Travis Kelce's had like seven straight 90 catch seasons now, which is a record, more than Torrey Holt or more than Marvin Harrison ever had. And it's just like, it seems like it's not a big deal because we just expect guys to put up big numbers. So I think that factors into what Lamar has been doing.
Jeffrey Chedia with us from NFL.com and the NFL Network. And I want to harken back to the way you broke it down for us at NFL.com about contenders in each conference. And I got to say, the NFC actually intrigues me more than the AFC, because I'm just going to look at some teams like maybe down on the list a little bit. Like, who the heck wants to play the Washington Commanders in the first round? Who wants to play the Rams in the first round?
Yeah.
Green Bay is not an easy out. I mean, there's all kind of danger in the NFC. And I want to zero in on a couple of things. Detroit is extremely vulnerable because of injuries, which you wrote about and we've all talked about. And the Vikings are 13-2, and yet I seem to think that they maybe there's still a pocket of football fans that don't quite take them as seriously as they should.
Yeah.
What's your view of the Vikings as it pertains to the Lions trying to glue everything back together again?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, I think it's rare as you have a year where you have two wild cards that are legitimate Super Bowl contenders that are as good as anybody who's going to win a division in the NFC. And one of those teams, Minnesota, could still win the NFC North. But you're right. I think just as people with the Chiefs were saying, yeah, they're 15-1, but, you know, look how they're winning. Look how they're playing. Look at not blowing people out. I feel like the narrative coming into the season on the Vikings was, Sam Darnold's their quarterback, and they're going to suck at some point. Like, he's going to blow it. He's going to screw it up. He's going to throw, like, 25 interceptions, and you're going to see how bad it is. And so I think there's still that stink on them, and people don't want to accept. And I was at their training camp. If you watch them in person and look at their roster is as good as anybody in the NFL. And now with the quarterback, you have to look at them seriously because he's playing like a guy who was a third overall pick in the draft. And so their defense is the best in the league. And I think Green Bay is probably a top five right behind them, what they're doing. But Brian Flores, the way they play defense, it's like Bill Belichick is calling the schemes over there. They're like second or third in the league in turnovers. They're second and third in the league in sacks. And when you factor in Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and Aaron Jones, and like they lost their left tackle, they didn't miss a beat. And so I feel like people really are underestimating. They've lost two games to the Lions and to the Rams. In both games, they lost the Lions by two, and the Rams game came down to a guy basically getting a face mask on a sack in the end zone at the end of the game. Like, that's it. And so, yeah, I think you take them very seriously to win a championship.
Jeff Fujita is an NFL.com columnist, being gracious enough to join us the day after Christmas. Jeffrey, thanks so much for your time, and look forward to talking to you again down the line.
Thanks, man.
All right, man. Same here. Take care, guys.
All right, very good. Great to talk to him. Bertie, I just thought he was great. The fact that Lamar Jackson got the record so much faster than Michael Vick just floors me.
The only thing Jackson hasn't done is won in the postseason, and that is going to be a big, big... And people that make a big deal about that, hey, that's just the nature of the position, right? So it's a legitimate thing to scrutinize. He's a remarkable football player, just remarkable. The combination of passing, running, leadership, just remarkable. But that 48-yard run for a touchdown yesterday, thing of beauty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, lot of great teams in the AFC and the NFC.
100. You mentioned the NFC. I mean, you look at Philadelphia, Washington, Detroit, Minnesota, Green Bay. Those are all really legitimate teams. Another break. We'll come back. We'll continue on. It's a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show on KMOX. The Gas House Gang is taking over the Dave Glover Show. My name is Matt Pauly. Bernie Miklas is here. We're going to be back with you tomorrow as well. We hope you are enjoying the program. You could text in if you'd like to, 314-436-7900. Bernie, we started down a path earlier. We ran out of time, and I want to come back to it for just a moment. And we both work in media and changing media, and you do your YouTube channel, which is fantastic. You've got a background in print with what you did here at the Post-Dispatch and obviously newspapers before that. I don't know if you know this. Did you know that at one point I was kind of a little bit of a member of the Post-Dispatch team? I don't think you knew
this. No, I did not know this.
So when I was in high school, I got a job at what was the time Stats Online, which was essentially the Post-Dispatch's prep section. They separated out the sports from the prep sports. We were in our own. We were in the Swerve building right there on the river, which is now condos. And I would pick up the phone on Friday nights, and I would take high school football box scores and input them, and then that way it could run in the Agate the next day.
Oh, yeah.
In the Post-Dispatch. And my dad, we were Sunday only subscribers growing up. My dad subscribed to the Saturday Post-Dispatch just so I could go look at the box scores that I had inputted in.
I did that.
The night before. And I was really prideful of that.
Yeah.
And eventually they like let me start covering some games in high school. Because I'm a high schooler covering high school games. I had photo credits in the Post-Dispatch as a high schooler.
I never knew that, man. I like that.
This isn't what we're going to talk about. I'll tell this quick story real quick.
That was my first job, too, like at the Baltimore News American. Mm-hmm. I would track down coaches and get box scores, but in high school basketball, football, all that stuff. I'd have to write roundups.
Yeah, it's a great. Yeah. I learned so much doing that.
I got the only time I've been fired from a newspaper job is I was working for the Annapolis Evening Capital, and I misplaced a file on a crazy Friday night. I'm looking at these like a team's file for reference. I don't know what happened to it. So Al Hopkins, who I later became great friends with. That's it. Sacked me.
Right there.
Yeah, gone.
Right in there, huh?
Gone. You know, so I deserved it, actually.
That's funny.
But he always said, like, I can't believe I fired you. How stupid. I said, no, man, I deserved it. And you woke me up, so you did me a favor. Because I was a dumb kid then.
Yeah.
Some people say, well, you're a dumb old guy. So
yeah, you stuck around for a little bit.
Yes.
I remember, so I went to Ladue High School. And I, whenever I tell this story, I want to be very clear. I had amazing teachers who had such a huge positive impact. Teachers and coaches at my high school were great. I had a print journalism teacher who just didn't like me. And I wasn't the best student in the world, but she just did not. You know, sometimes you're around people and you just sense, okay, they don't like me. For whatever reason, they don't like me. And I wanted her to like me because I was, you know, journalism was the direction that I was going. So it really bothered me that she didn't like me. And I remember the first time I got a photo credit in the Post-Dispatch, man, I was excited. And after I showed my parents, the next person I wanted to talk to, I think her name was Mrs. Brady, if I remember correctly. I remember going in and taking the Post-Dispatch. I'm a high school kid in a journalism class, and I have a photo credit in the Post-Dispatch.
It's something to be proud of.
Awesome. I show it to her. This could have happened yesterday. It has stuck with me for the rest of my life. Because in the beginning, wasn't the best high school student. She looks at me and she goes, that's nice, but it would be, maybe you should think about spending a little bit more time on the student newspaper. She said, I have a photo credit in the Post-Dispatch and my journalism teacher at the high school. And at that point, I kind of said to myself, it doesn't actually matter if she doesn't like me. She doesn't get this.
She doesn't, and it's also just, man, she failed. I mean, you should encourage your students that have gotten something like that, have done something like that at such an early age, beyond expectations. You should encourage them and push them, just push them ahead to say, hey, look, see, now, doesn't that show you what you can do?
Right, yeah.
You know,
so,
no, I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's always stuck with me about that. So, but again, I had a wonderful educational experience at that high school.
Yeah,
but
I'm mad on your behalf.
I wasn't trying to get you upset there. Hopefully she's not still there, but I don't know. Maybe she is. Anyways, I thought about this earlier. We're talking because I think the staff at the Post-Dispatch, I mean, it's second to none, especially from a sports standpoint. Oh my gosh, do I enjoy reading them? But the industry, and it's happening in radio, it's happening in TV, it's happening everywhere. We're all going more towards digital. It's at a point now where the Post-Dispatch recently said they're going to be printing in Columbia. That means breaking sports. The byline's going to change. Basically, there's not going to be Cardinal game stories inside of the Post-Dispatch anymore if you still get it to your doorstep. And it's things like that that just so illustrate how this industry is changing, and sometimes not always for good.
And there's nothing you can do. You got to evolve with it, because you know squawking about it. Squawking about it's not going to get you anywhere. All that's going to do is prevent you or stop you or slow you from evolving and sort of adjusting to the shifting sands and the changing times. Because every time we think that, well, okay, now. Now we know kind of where everything is. That was such a big change. Now there's going to be stability for a while. Now I know what to expect in this business. It's going to change again. And so you really got to be able to maneuver and pivot pretty quickly. Podcasting is a great example too. There were never any podcasts like at the Post-Dispatch STL Today, and I'm not knocking. I'm just saying it's the way it was. And when Derek Gould and I started the best podcast in baseball, it was a huge, huge hit, probably bigger than it should have been, but it's just because there were podcasts, but in this market, an all Cardinals podcast all the time, year round, like a lead columnist at the Post-Dispatch, lead baseball writer at the Post-Dispatch. That's an example, like, where you understood that, like, hey, you know, don't scoff at podcasting. This is going to be a really big deal. This is a thing. This is how people want to consume a lot of the information we have. And so it wasn't easy for my, you know, always easy for a guy like my dear late friend Rick Hummel and others. But I think most writers got it. It took a while, but they got it. And like I give the Post-Dispatch STL Today a lot of credit because their staff is very mobile. Their staff is can hit you on all platforms. They're all over the place all the time. So I think they've done an incredible job under Roger Hensley, sports editor, and some others there of just being able to be in the moment and maneuver when you have to maneuver. Be in the present with whatever's new. And they've done a great job with it.
Coming up in our next segment, actually, if you want to text in some things here, we might be able to use them. We're going to – you ever, like, make a reference that you think is just an obvious reference and somebody else doesn't get it, whether it's because it's not in their realm or maybe there's an age issue, whatever it might be. If there's something that you're just used to saying or referencing, like, it's like everybody should know it, and recently you've been realizing not everybody knows it, give us some examples of those. You can text in at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. We were inspired by something that happened on social media. We'll pass that along, and we'll try to figure out some examples of our own. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. It's the Gas House Gang in for the Dave Glover Show here on KMOX. It's the Dave Glover Show with no Dave Glover, no Rachel Zimmerman, no Kevin Wheeler. Andrew's not here, but Matthew Rocchio's here. He is producing for us along with John Camp. I'm Matt Pauly. Bernie Miklas. We've got a full crew. It's just not the crew that you're used to hearing at this time. I threw this out earlier. If there's any like pop culture references that used to be something that just everybody understood and now not as many people understand it, yet you're saying it and you get frustrated when you say something and people don't understand, text it in. 314-436-7900. Matthew Rocchio here with us. So you'll do a better job than I will. So I'm just going to throw things to you. We were inspired for this segment based off something that happened on social media.
Yeah, it was on Twitter or X, however you want to call it, and there was a movie critic who saw the news, and the news being that Christopher Nolan's next film has been announced. He is doing a take on the legendary story of the Odyssey, and there's a bunch of big names already attached to the movie. Tom Holland, Zendaya, Matt Damon, because it is a Christopher Nolan film. That Anne Hathaway's also attached. Robert Pattinson, who he worked with on Tenet's also attached. But the big thing was that the movie critic responded to this news with kind of this crazy reaction, like, oh my God, Chris Nolan's doing a movie based off a poem from ancient Greece. And kind of like, this is a crazy new idea. I've never seen somebody do something like this. And that caused everyone over the last 2 days to respond with in very kind of derogatory terms for him, just kind of making fun of him for not realizing that the Odyssey is a formative piece of Western culture and has been for well over 2,000 years. And this kind of just got me thinking, because I think a lot of times we run into people and you'll make a reference and they don't get it, and you're just kind of like, how have you not picked this up? And I think we all have those blind spots, but I did think that this one was one that everyone had kind of been exposed to at some point in their life, but apparently not.
Yeah, this one is more like a classic piece of something, so you would think most people would know it. Bernie, something that Ricky Horton says all the time, he does the, well, did you hear about the Lindbergh baby? And there's a lot of people who do not pick up on the Lindbergh baby reference anymore. People go, well, what are you talking about?
That was a long time ago now. I couldn't blame anybody for that. I was coming up blank on this. I'm trying to think of like some examples of like cultural stuff. Not so much products or technology at a certain time, you know, like would people understand if you tried to explain, you know, 8-tracks, or you try to explain cassettes, or you try to explain getting movies mailed to you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the current generation doesn't understand VCRs.
Yeah,
and VHS.
Right, and you know, recording things the way we used to record things. But as far as like cultural reference, I got to say, man, I'm flunking this one.
I've got one, and this is
F for failure here on this one.
I was born in 1991. There are people my age who, if you said the phrase, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall," they would give you a blank stare.
Of course they would.
And that is one of those in my mind that's got to be like, how did you get through the world? And because here's the thing. The thing about the Odyssey is, it's not that you ever read it, because it's very annoying to read and it's very old. It's that every single television show across the last like 60 years has made some kind of reference to the Odyssey in one way or the other. Like, The Simpsons has multiple episodes mm-hmm. where they make jokes about the Odyssey. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Is talked about as this seminal movie that is it is the Odyssey story being retold in a different way, and that's a very popular movie. And so it's just like Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall. It's like, how did you get through 20 years without being hit with something at some point?
I don't think it's probably being taught in schools quite as much.
Probably a lot not being taught.
That's
right?
It's probably true.
You know. No, I hear you. You know, you get into that. You can make some references to some world events that have happened 20, 25, 30 years ago. I'm sure you get a lot of blank faces among people of a certain age.
Yeah, there's pop culture references. I got a couple text messages. Somebody wrote in groovy that people don't. I use the word groovy. I don't think I've ever gotten pushed back on groovy.
Yeah, I don't think I may throw it in every now and then.
Okay.
I've actually made references to the Odyssey and stuff I've written when I make fun of myself for writing columns that are way too long.
Okay, that's
see, I'm going to wrap this up because it's becoming like a half, well, I can't say that word, but it's becoming like, you know, some kind of half-baked baseball version of the Odyssey.
Well, now you know people watching might not have any clue what you're making reference to.
Yeah.
And see, part of me wonders, like, you hear something like the Michigan, or you hear the USC Trojans, and at no point in your life have you ever been like quizzical enough to be like, where did they get that mascot name
Trojan,
from?
Yeah.
And figure out what, like, even like the Trojan War and things like that. Right. Or just like, how ubiquitous is the phrase a Trojan
Maybe
horse?
They just think you're something that you buy at the drugstore.
Exactly.
You know?
Whoa.
Be very quiet.
No, you were saying something during the break, Rock. It's scary to think about. There's like people, Americans, walking around, kids primarily, not little kids, who, like, if you say 9/11, they look at you. They don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's that when I started meeting people in everyday life that were born after 9/11, as somebody who I was in fifth grade, so that's the big seminal first moment in my life where it's like, oh, you're living in a world where things happen. You're not just reading about history books. And now I meet kids who weren't even born yet and who don't have any context of what the world was like before that. And I don't have a great context, but I have some, right. And that blows my mind.
More texts coming in. Where's the beef is another one that people say might not get. Somebody else said, if its and butts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. It is believed that Don Meredith was the one who started that.
I don't even remember that either.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the saying, but I don't know who started it.
I worked with when I was doing AAA baseball in Colorado Springs, I worked with a broadcaster by the name of Dan Karcher. He said that all the time. On our broadcast. It was a constant.
So in other words, he was pretty annoying.
I'm not saying that. I liked him a lot. Won't go there. I was from I'm 7 years older than my wife, and there will be like periods of pop culture stuff that I know, and she comes up empty. Like there's some like early 90s TV shows because I was born in 82 and she was born in 88. So the other day I made reference to the show Perfect Strangers. People maybe remember that had Balky in it. I don't know if anybody, but she had no, like, that's a show that I loved growing up, and she had no thought of that whatsoever. She didn't know what it was. So it's funny. Like, you don't think about 6-7 years being that big of a difference, but there is definitely a pop culture hole in there of stuff that I'm familiar with that she is not.
This is why I also think it's important if you have kids to just like, to interject them with that or inject them with that kind of stuff, because like one thing that pops up to me is my parents used to always make a reference to a very popular commercial, and now I know the reference, and I saw a new commercial is referring to it, which is he likes it, he really likes it. Mm-hmm. That's an old commercial that ran for a very long time when my parents were in their formative years, and I was a little kid. I knew the reference because my parents would say it every time whatever the cereal was, it was a Life. I think it might have been, or something, or something like that. But they would make the same jokes, and so I got that reference. And so I also think it's important. You gotta pass down the references as well.
I got one. This is more for my teenage years, right? So now I don't know that the phrase has been beaten to death for a long time, which is, you know, there's a TV show you like, and all of a sudden one season gets a little weird or whatever. Oh, they jumped the shark. Jump the shark, yeah. Jump the shark, jump the shark. And I always heard that, and people were like using it over and over and over again too much. And I remember, it's like, well, they don't even know where that comes from. And it came from Happy Days.
Right, with Fonzie in 1977. The shark, yeah.
Yeah, he was water skiing.
Yeah.
And he actually jumped a shark. And that's where that started. But then all of a sudden, like, this becomes a big part of the cultural language where everyone's trying to show how clever they are, except they're the opposite of clever. They're, you know, they're using a cliche. It became a terrible cliche.
And I think
no one ever knew where it came from.
I think that's a great example, because I know jumping the shark that coming from Happy Days, because they make there's an entire episode of That 70s Show, which was a show during my childhood,
right.
Where they make fun of that episode of Happy Days. And that's where I was like, oh, and so it's one of those things, right, where it's like, even now, formative stuff 20 years later,
right,
told me about it. And I think that's why it's important to always keep these things going.
And the belief was that's where that show basically ended, where, yeah, Happy Days, it was no more. Once he jumped the shark, there was nothing left for that show.
See, now that would actually be a fun segment as well, where some classic heralded beloved TV shows,
mm-hmm,
they actually did, quote, jump the shark.
Like, if you could go back in history, yeah, and you could put a stop at, like, one moment, this, right, where you don't go past it, where would that be?
I don't know. See, we have to think of some of those. Maybe we can come back with that tomorrow and,
yeah,
give it some thought.
That would be good.
Because it's always sad when it happens. And the thing of it is, you know it,
yep,
as soon as the episode runs. It's like, uh-oh.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing more that's going to go on here, is there, you know? Like, when I think about some of the class, and I don't know when they had a jump the shark moment. Like, you look at the great series ER, for example, or you look at the great series West Wing, or you look at the great series some that we love very, very much. Did The Sopranos ever have a jump the shark moment? I'm just freelancing here, so I'm thinking of a lot of things. But there have been some great, 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 great TV shows in American history where all of a sudden there's one episode and you never could, like, feel, you know, you just couldn't look at it the same way again. You know, something had changed in a bad way, and it was like, not, you're not going to recover from it.
If you've got thoughts on that, maybe text those in as well, and
yeah,
we can revisit that coming up tomorrow. We've got one more segment to go. We'll take a break. Back with more in just a moment right here on KMOX. Starting to wrap up day number one of the Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. And, of course, if we're talking Gas House Gang, we're talking about our great friends at Saliga Heating and Cooling. They have been such a big part of us being able to bring the Gas House Gang to you. And, Bernie, I know you've been with them for a really, really long time.
Yeah, we're so appreciative of Dan Saliga and the Saliga family, which has continuously owned Saliga Heating and Cooling since 1927. And you talk about staying power, and you know, think about that, 1927. So they're coming up on pretty soon, be 100 years in business, the same family. And you say, well, you got to be not just pretty good or good, you got to be great to approach your 100th anniversary as a family business and still be going strong. And that's why they're so terrific. And we have found that out. The Miklas family has found that out with 16 years or so of calling Saliga for, we have a problem, we have a question, we think something's broken down, can you come look at this? Whatever it might be, a mini emergency. Prompt service, attention to detail. You can totally trust everything they tell you. They're not trying to hustle you, upsell you, tell you need something that you don't. And they also have that American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning equipment. They are an independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer. They can do anything you would imagine. A business that's been around since 1927, they'll take great care of you, and you can trust them. They'll work with you. They'll present cheaper alternatives if you do have a problem. They'll try to save you money rather than to cost you more money. And I think you would be very impressed if you've never called Saliga Heating and Cooling. Try to go online at SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Get the phone number, but also take a look at all their services. It is a long, long list of services, stuff you probably wouldn't imagine you would see on there. And also look at information on the Priority Club, which is a maintenance program, a preventative maintenance program, which will keep you safe and give you peace of mind. It'll save you money. I mean, the benefits are numerous. And you can read all about it if you go to SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Financing options are available, subject to credit approval. It's Saliga Heating and Cooling. And the phone number, 314-481-7333.
You mentioned Saliga coming up in 100 years. Should be noted, Christmas Eve, just a couple days ago, the 99th birthday of KMOX. We went on the air 99 years ago, 1925, on December 24th. So we are now into our 100th year of existence.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So
proud to be a part of it, all of us.
We're going to do this again tomorrow, Bernie. Right.
And we have some good things to talk about, college football playoffs. Yep. How do we fix the flaws we've seen? And there's some more. We'll get into some more Cardinals talk. There's a lot of things to hit.
Hey, maybe Nolan Arenado's going to get traded at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I'll be checking first thing when I wake up. Did it happen? MLB trade rumors. Tell me. Talk to me. What do you got for me?
We've got the Countdown to Opening Day show coming up tonight from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Myself and Mike Claiborne. It is our holiday edition where we go into some archive audio tonight. We're going to play a snippet for you of a great conversation that Mike Shannon had with Stan Musial. It was so much fun. I got the chance to kind of go back and listen through a bunch of stuff and choose what I wanted to go with. That's going to be part of the program tonight. Thanks so much for being tuned in to our Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. Bernie, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 o'clock right here on KMOX.